Travel back in time with us this week to a post-war Japan where a giant sea creature threatens the not-yet-post-war boomed country. For the lead-up to the big G's 70th anniversary, Toho went back to the basics that made the original Gojira a smash hit the world over and has seemingly repeated history as a critical darling and financial success. This is Kaiju vs. History, Godzilla Minus One.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your kamikaze pilot whose World War II won't end while Godzilla still stands, Patrick. And joining me is your plucky sea captain who serves as the heart and soul of this film, Miles.
Hey, well, hey, Patrick. Hey, Patrick. Good to see you from the past.
This is a time capsule episode of sorts, because indeed we are recording this about a week after we both have seen this movie in 2023.
Yeah, we saw this baby in theaters.
Yeah, and this is one of the first movies to have kind of come out while we've been doing this podcast. And we are keeping with our schedule of kind of watching the movies in order, reviewing them alongside similar movies. But I mean, we had to talk about this movie as soon as possible. We were about to explode.
We were both so excited, and apparently the rest of the world and the nation agrees with us. So we had to talk about this, and I'm actually really excited because to see how we'll feel about this, you know, in the future. But wowie zowie, did I want to talk about this? I mean, just because right now this movie has the zeitgeist. As we are talking, the movie has been given an extended week in America. It did so well.
it's the best opening for a foreign language release, I think,
correct,
ever, which is pretty awesome. Not just like a Japanese
and the movie. Best for a Japanese live action film.
Yes. Yeah. So pretty amazing stuff for Godzilla. When we started this podcast, I mean, there was the MonsterVerse. Shin Godzilla had come out in 2016, but we weren't certain of what the future was going to look like. I think this movie had just been kind of announced in 2021. Yeah,
they were talking about like, and from what I remember, like it was supposed to initially, before the MonsterVerse even got past versus Kong, it was supposed to be the kickoff of their new universe. And then we heard, oh, well, no, it's going to be a standalone film. And now we're hearing, well, maybe not.
No, I'm sorry. It got super successful. We're giving this director carte blanche.
As well, they should.
Yeah. So we're breaking tradition on this podcast. Yeah, we're probably going to do this a few more times as well, but we're recording this right after the movie came out, 2023. Miles, you're going to be shocked. We are skipping 100 episodes. This episode comes out, I think it's episode 231, like in February of 2026, somewhere in that range.
That's so insane.
A little bit of a time capsule for us, but yeah, it does mean we have to take into consideration when we're recording this, we are in the middle of season 5. I think we're fast forward to season 8 with this podcast, right? Yeah. The 2020. So we have to compare this to the other films of, you know, the current decade. We're talking the MonsterVerse films, classics like The Meg 2, The Trench that came out this year. what else? I mean, there's not much.
That's about it, I feel like. I'm sure. There's other stuff that's probably come out.
Knockoffs and things. Last year, Netflix had the Troll movie.
We got the Gamera series.
We will have talked about that. Yeah, there's some great TV series, and one we're going to talk about next week when this podcast comes out. But I will say, as far as Godzilla is concerned, this is like the best time to be a Godzilla fan. And it makes me so happy that we started this podcast, because we were a little worried we might not have too much stuff to continue on talking about, but obviously we were very wrong. This movie rocked our socks.
Yeah, I know we're kind of spoiling how we feel about this movie, but I mean, at the same time, if you're listening to this show in 2025 or 2026, whatever, You probably know the impact this movie already had because it's already been immediate.
I mean, yeah, I was about to say one of the things that we look at in the history for these movies is their legacy, how they impact the genre. And when this episode comes out, are we already going to have a sequel to this movie? Like, who knows? I'm jealous of future listeners.
I would think so. Gosh, it's going to sound so silly. People are like, these morons.
I, you know, like I said, I'm just excited to record this early and get in our thoughts. But, you know, I think we should do our due diligence and come back in a few years and watch this movie again and see if it stands
and like up. And like maybe annotate, like have a 10-minute like, okay, here's how we feel, like as far as like the breakdown, like the personal enjoyments, technical, like this, that, like a 10-minute conversation to
if this
to
episode kind of is like doubly long. Yes,
yeah, what's the word I'm looking for?
Annotate or
annotation. Jeez. Yeah.
Well,
I can't. But we've been podcasting for like 4 hours at this point.
If we don't do that, then you can just assume our scores stand and we weren't going to change them at all. But yeah, we are talking about Toho Studios' 33rd Godzilla film, the 37th in the entire Godzilla series, counting, you know, U.S. adaptations. Mm-hmm. And
that's not counting Godzilla X Kong, right?
Well, no, that movie comes out next year, so that'll be the 38th, believe it or not. So, but yeah, but you know, when we're recording this, that means this film series, this monster, this character has 10 more movies than James Bond, what is often cited as like the longest running series of films. But no, it's Godzilla by a mile. even if you're just counting the Toho ones, there's like 27 Bond films. So there's still more just regular Toho movies. Toho Studios put this out. It was also produced by Robot Communications, which we'll talk a little bit. It's the production company, the creative team, the producers behind the Always Sunset on 3rd Street series, mm-hmm. which I think we will have had talked about a little bit because there is an extended Godzilla sequence in the second movie.
Dream sequence, right?
Yes. Yeah, but yeah, that's the same director. Sequence
is hilarious.
Yeah, and it looks great. That's the other thing. But yeah, more recently, I mean, but when this episode is recorded, maybe not when it comes out, they did the Alice in Borderlands show on Netflix, as well as the live-action Yu Yu Hakusho, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, and this director, I've actually been watching his stuff for quite a while, Takashi Yamazaki.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about him a lot because he's writer, director, special effects coordinator.
Yeah, and apparently, like he said he didn't work on it, but like the company he worked for also worked on Shin Godzilla special effects,
and he directed the Godzilla ride experience, yeah. which we'll talk about a little bit more.
As well, I think as this year's Ultraman ones. This guy's in it. Well, so the ones that in 2002, I remember a film called Returner coming out, action sci-fi movie. And I know it didn't do super well, but like, I think it did well, I guess critically, but I think it did decent on like home video. I remember this hitting like every Suncoast and Best Buy. I know I had a copy of it at one point, and I remember thinking it was fun, but I actually watched
for the Moyer.
Oh, well, if you look at the artwork, you're like, oh, I've definitely seen that image before.
It looks like Wesker from the...
Yeah, there was a variations because there were different covers that were very similar. They used that same image. So you've definitely seen that around. Mm-hmm. But for the More Your Nerd podcast, I watched... He had directed the kind of... Or wrote and directed the reboot of the Lupin the Third film series. Yes. Or not the film series, but like he did
the animated
of Lupin. Yeah, he did the CGI animation Lupin the Third, the first, which is incredible.
Yeah, I've only seen clips, but I mean it's gotten high reviews from folks.
In 2023, if you want to listen to the More You Nerd for a little bit, we did a deep dive to cover like most of the main eras, not everyone, but most of the main eras of Lupin the Third, and then we ended with this movie. And so we'd have some context and everything. And I got to tell you, even though like they cram a lot into it, they really do nail the spirit of Lupin the Third. And so if it's your first Lupin the Third, I could see it as a good gateway. I'm actually excited to show it to my fiance because she's never seen any Lupin the Third, and I want to see if she gets more jazzed about following these characters.
Miles. When this episode comes out, she'll be your wife.
I know. That's true. I should have thought about that. But yeah, so I've been very stoked on Yamazaki's work. I think he's an incredibly talented guy. And so I was excited to hear that he was the person doing the new Godzilla film.
You might be interested to hear this, but I mean, he's getting so much love on, I mean, who knows if it's still called Twitter at this point, but on social media, online. And I think people are going back and experiencing some more of his films because of that. But believe it or not, he is the oldest director to have taken on a first Godzilla film. This movie came out, he was 59 years old. Isn't that crazy?
I guess that is crazy. I guess before we go further, I did this like a lot when we were recording these sessions. Patrick, tell us, what's in the title?
Oh, do you want to actually talk about Godzilla Minus
One? Yeah, let's talk about Godzilla Minus Zero.
Oh yeah, minus zero. There's a lot of things that this.
Oh no, minus one. Sorry.
Well, yeah. I mean, minus zero is one of the things that kind of got called, or Godzilla Zero. But this film, it had a few different iterations during its development. When we started this podcast, they had just announced that they were looking for actors for what was advertised as quote blockbuster monster movie, Chotosaku Kaiju Aja. So that's what was on our schedule for the longest time. It's like, yeah, probably in 2024, they're going to have a new Godzilla movie for the 70th anniversary. We're very surprised that this came out a full year before that in 2023. But yeah, then I don't know if this was just developed by fans or if this was put out as kind of the working title. It was called Godzilla Zero for the longest time. You can find articles kind of like breaking down what it was about, because I think some of the set or script elements were leaked and people found out that this was taking place in the 40s. So this was going to happen before 1954 Gojira. So they're like, maybe this is a prequel movie. Godzilla Zero makes sense in that case. If Godzilla 1954 is the first movie, this will be Zero. But that did not turn out to be the case. The title, or the tagline, kind of gives away a little about the movie and why they titled this Singo Nihon Zero Kara Minasu E, which translates to post-war Japan from zero to minus.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a reference to Japan after the war were, I mean, absolutely destroyed. We get to see Tokyo in this movie, which during the firebombings had greater casualties than both the Nagasaki and Hiroshima combined. And that's represented very well, because almost everyone, all the main characters we see from Tokyo, all their family has been killed in the bombings. So that's where the movie is starting, at nothing. They have nothing, their houses, their lives, their families destroyed. And then Godzilla shows up and it gets worse. And they go from zero to being in a negative position. And that's, I think the director has been quoted as that's what the meaning of the title.
Yeah. But
to me, it means something completely different, which is, it feels like a countdown. You know, when you count down to like an A-bomb going off, you say T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, and eventually you get to minus 1, which is like 1 second before an explosion. And I don't know if that was like part of the translation, but it has a bunch of meanings, and I really appreciate that. I got that from the title, because when they were announcing this movie, the title, the poster, they started with Shin Godzilla. And every day on the Godzilla Plus app and on a new Twitter account, they started showing like one poster from the 33 theatrically released live action movies, like going backwards in time,
mm-hmm.
until they got to Gojira in like August or whatever. And then the next day they showed the first poster and I think some of the images for Godzilla Minus One. That was the first time we got a real good look at the monster design, and I think it was only like three images, but I got very hyped from that countdown. I was watching it very closely. And yeah, we only had to wait about a month because, like I said, 33 posters that they went through. And yeah, I forget when we got the first trailer for the movie, like maybe October, but it was like,
yeah, it was
far.
Yeah.
Far into the production. I feel like normally you would get some more hype leading up to this, but this movie came out on Godzilla Day, November 3rd of 2023 in Japan. And I think maybe very limited release here in the US. I want to say that there was at least like an LA, maybe a New York premiere for the movie, because I saw a lot of Americans that are kind of like in the know for these kind of movies got to see like an advanced screening. But we did not get to see it until, I guess, the early regular release of the movie was November 29th. So, you know, about a month later. And like I said, we both saw this just last week.
Honestly, it was torture waiting for this movie, because it was all of these people who have been involved with the franchise, or people that I know who, like Graham Skipper, who wrote the book for North America on Godzilla.
Graham Skipper.
Hope so.
Godzilla friend. And yeah, he actually got to interview the director, Yamazaki, for Fangoria. And I've got some of his notes in our historical background here for the film.
But I mean,
yeah, it was getting some
Hideaki Anno, Gareth Edwards, Hideo Kojima, all these people were like,
oh, yeah,
being extremely, and randomly Seth Green as well, but extremely superlative about how good this movie was. And I was just kind of like incensed, because it was still like a month before it was going to hit theaters here. And Patrick, I think you saw it that Wednesday, and I saw it that Thursday or Friday. And I could not wait to see this movie. I don't think I've been this excited about seeing a Godzilla movie in theaters probably since like I was a kid and went to the 98 one, like just being stoked. Like, I mean, and I've loved all the MonsterVerse movies. I've been excited about all of them, but like there is something special about seeing a Japanese Godzilla film in theaters. You know, this is where Godzilla really comes from. And hearing just like all these great things, I was honestly a little worried going in that, oh, man, I hope it's as good as everyone says it is.
It was so unbelievably hyped. I mean, those people that you mentioned are some of the creatives that I care the most about on this planet.
Right.
Like, saying like, this is a pure masterpiece.
Yeah. There's a lot of reason to be pretty excited, but let's get into it. So for anyone who hasn't seen Godzilla Minus One, hopefully it's streaming or on Blu-ray right now. Sometimes these things can be goofy, but given the immediate success, I'm assuming we are going to get a home release of this movie. So yeah, give us kind of just a quick summary of what this movie is about plot wise.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I like doing the show is we are looking at these movies in their historical context. But yeah, this movie comes out in 2023 and is set, I mean, almost 80 years before. It starts in 1945 and I think it ends in 47. I forget if it was 47 or 48, but it's only a couple years of post-war Japan. But it, I think, represents that period maybe better than I've ever seen it on film before. You know, just the bombed out husk of Tokyo, and you know what some of these characters like had to go through, and literally kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel just to make ends meet. There is a lot of the tensions that are still going on in 1954's Gojira in this movie between the U.S. and Russia. And the director Yamazaki said that, you know, real world tensions, like when they were in the production of this movie, it was the midst of COVID, so there was that pressure. But Russia had just invaded the Ukraine, you know, about a year ago when they started filming. So like elements of that are kind of suffused into this movie. And it does have, I think, for the first time, the an actual real life A-bomb testing is shown to be the direct cause of Godzilla's mutation. And we get to see it on screen for like a brief moment, but that's Operation Crossroads of 1946. The two bombs dropped on the Bikini Atoll of the Marshall Islands.
And yeah, I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be his origin or if it was just like what ticked him off even more.
we see Godzilla before that in World War II. We'll talk right about the differences there. But yeah, no, it literally shows the flesh melting off of Godzilla's bones, perhaps giving him his atomic breath or his powers here. But yeah, this is the first time that I think an actual U.S. bomb is the cause of Godzilla's powers. You know, in the original Gojira, it's like, yeah, it's a little questionable
it's implied that's what it was, but like
or we don't where actually it was.
See it.
Yeah, we don't know what's the actual test. I guess
we see some of it in. Don't we see some of it in Godzilla versus King Ghidorah?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that. I don't remember, but this actually uses footage from the
actual test
Crossroads. Yeah. So yeah, that's where we start in World War II with a failed kamikaze pilot, kind of a good thing, unable to complete his mission, returning to a base, and we see a kind of like a Godzillasaurus or pre-Godzilla.
It's certainly, you're right, it's certainly a Godzillasaurus of some sort, because while it is big, it's not the size that he is later in the film.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of like the original Godzilla size, like 50
yeah,
meters.
He's a big beefy boy, but
and
like,
then it goes to like 80 meters for the attack on Tokyo.
Yeah.
And it's super interesting that we get to see both of those in one movie.
And we get to see the passage. We get periods for a little bit of like the passage of time, because he comes back to Japan, and you get to see the reactions of the people around him, you know, finding out, oh, this kamikaze pilot came home, and the ramifications of that, and then the passage of time. I think the like from, you know, meeting, oh gosh, didn't have it pulled up.
Noriko,
and how they kind of link up initially, as well as, you know, kind of having an adopted daughter in Akio. And I think that this is the first time, and like, I'm always one that kind of defends the human story, but this is the first time that the human story has been so good, so compelling, and so important. I would have watched this film if Godzilla wasn't in it.
And yeah, that like, was very, very important to Yamazaki. And he talks about that in interviews, how, you know, they have to make a movie and then also have kind of Godzilla in it, because, well, for one reason, they just don't have the special effects budget that the MonsterVerse does, you know,
right?
It's like a full half hour of giant monsters smashing one another in all the MonsterVerse movies. And I mean, they don't have that budget for this movie. Maybe a good thing, because like you said, that human plot is, I mean, bar none, I think the best kind of story that we've ever gotten in a Godzilla movie. Best human characters, best story, kind of, you know, going hand in hand with the destruction of Godzilla. I mean, since the original, since Gojira in 1954.
No, this is definitely a special case. And I think it's also important to, like, this is what showcases, if you give someone enough of a budget, it's not saying like, oh, all low budget movie, but if you give someone enough of a budget to carry out a vision, they can do great things with it. You don't have to have $100 million. Now, I know there is an underlying thing. There's been a lot of comments about, oh, this movie only cost 15. And a lot of people saying, well, the way the special effects industry is in Japan is really, really rough. It makes it makes Marvel look fantastic to work for. So there is an asterisk to that. But that said, it's still like they're still doing stuff with less.
Mm-hmm.
And achieving great things with it. Like Godzilla in this film looks fantastic. They do, but because, yes, they do less is more. They do more with the emotional storytelling. And honestly, Koichi is a great character. You have so many complex characters. There's no, it's not as black and white. And I like that because he does things that you don't agree with, but you also understand why he's doing them. And then when other people react to him, like at first, because he's the protagonist, you're like, oh, well, that person's being a jerk. And then you're like, well, you have to look at it from their perspective. And it's a very complicated thing. And it deals with a lot of complicated emotions from the aftermath of the war. And this film does a lot to talk about, you know, it's very critical of the Japanese government and its handling of the citizens. And it's very critical of the lives that people had to kind of resalvage after the war from the war itself, from the Americans, from the Japanese itself, from the things that people were forced to do against their own will. It's a very war critical film, but it's also, and I was going to segue for something for you, Patrick, because I know you made note of it. It is amongst, because this is where he wanted to start off, is the minus one. Amongst being below zero, this movie forges a message of hope amongst common citizens. And I think that is incredible.
Yeah, and that was one of the questions Grand Skipper asked of Yamazaki.
That's what I said. I was segueing for you, buddy.
In that Fangoria article, which, you know, he talks about how this is also one of the most frightening Godzilla movies probably ever, but...
Oh, the scene where he's like following the boat is downright Jaws-like in its creepiness.
But yeah, Yamazaki mentions, Coed mentions Russia invading Ukraine and said, quote, I felt that the Godzilla metaphor of being the greatest challenge for humanity and people banding together to overcome a Godzilla or a big challenge was really timely. And that is really the message of this movie. And where so many other, I think, Godzilla movies can really take note from, I mean, since, like I said, the original Gojira was the exact opposite. It was about self-sacrifice. It was about doing what needs to be done in the face of existential threats. This one is about a community of people coming together to save themselves and not ask what their government had asked of them, which is to lay down their life, but rather to give everything to survive. And, you know, we talked about how, you know, Shin Godzilla, that movie is very much about the Fukushima disaster and the government's management. This movie's protagonists are, instead of government workers, they are just civilians kind of doing what they can in a very trying time, which is probably why this movie is doing so well. Is it does really, I think, capture kind of a zeitgeist of a modern generation.
Yeah, it is very community based. Mm-hmm. I'll say that it's very, you know, the government's not going to do it. The community needs to do it. It's I mean, borderline socialist in that. but I also love that it is this community effort of people who survived the war and what they are able to accomplish. And also, honestly, giving a really scientifically fascinating, like,
yeah, there's no
plan against Godzilla.
There's no Ice Nine. There's no magical chemical to.
There's no Oxygen Destroyer.
Yeah, there's nothing secret weapon really about this, you know, this Godzilla. They are treating it like a giant animal. And they're in Noda's mind, we'll talk about it, that they can just kill it like any other living thing on the planet with either intense pressure of the ocean's bottom or, you know, bringing it rapidly to the surface and just destroying it that way. And, you know, it makes sense, you know, from my point of view as a Godzilla fan, I'm like, oh, well, the bottom of the ocean's not going to hurt Godzilla. But
right. He sleeps down there.
Yeah. I mean, but then I was thinking about it. I was like, maybe he sleeps down there because it has some kind of properties that like enhance him, you know, but yeah, it doesn't.
Well,
doesn't
also
stop
he goes at his own pace. What they were saying is the rapid decompression is what would hurt him or like putting him down there so fast, the pressure gets to his cells and then popping him up so fast that he just, you know, can't withstand the decompression. It's a pretty brilliant idea. I'm gonna drive a plane to his head.
Oh yeah, I knew that was gonna have to be the deciding factor. But when you're in the planning room with the characters in this movie, you are so hopeful for them, but also like in my mind, I was just like, I wonder what 50 things are going to go wrong during this plan, because obviously the first plan has no chance of working. Maybe the second plan will do something. The rapidly using the explosive balloons, which felt like a very Showa era thing, but also very realistic to bring Godzilla rapidly to the surface. And I love Godzilla snaps through his little safety belt, his water wing safety belt, and then they have to whip them to the surface with all the tugboats. It's just, oh man, the climax is so good.
And but even like the original Godzilla, his initial attack on the city is monumental. It feels like a natural disaster. Like you feel like you're getting a tsunami, an earthquake, a volcano exploding all in one thing. It's horrific. You see some deaths that are pretty in your face.
You know, what's so surprising about it is, outside of his first instance, every single scene of Godzilla is in the daytime, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people made it of that.
It's crazy. I mean, you think
they were reacting specifically to
the original Gojira.
The original Gojira, Shin Godzilla. Yeah. Actually, the fact that most Godzilla movies tend to take place during the day. But also, one of the critical things about the MonsterVerse that a lot of Godzilla fans have complained about was that, oh, everything takes place at night. Yeah. I don't care as much, but I know that's been a complaint.
Well, I mean, like you said, that destruction of Genza scene is so, so great. And I mean, part of, I think, why it's set during the day is because we have basically an atomic bomb blast that goes off, and you want to be able to see that.
Let's talk about that first, which might be my favorite scene in the movie. It's hardest pick, but like that first time that he pops off the fire breath, the atomic breath. And like in this iteration, like we've seen, it's been happening for years, and the MonsterVerse kind of perfected that, like he kind of charges up through his tail. And then lets it go. This one, you have like each spike kind of popping up as the power courses up his spine. Yeah,
it's fairly grotesque in a lot of ways, and it is enough to set this Godzilla design very far apart than a lot of the other suits that have been used.
It does feel a little Millennium like with its spikes.
Some people pointed out as well that is it Godzilla 2000 that has the extremely large kind of purplish dorsal plates, maybe was a little bit of an inspiration for this version of Godzilla. Like we mentioned, Takashi Yamazaki put together a ride for Godzilla, and it just called Godzilla the Ride. And the design for the Godzilla in that movie is very similar to this one. It is it's not a pseudomated character in any form. There was no motion capture. This was done all on kind of, I guess, the backs of the CGI artists. Takashi said that he used kind of like hand puppets and things to like.
Yeah, there's a great picture of him holding up like a big Godzilla action figure.
Yeah, I don't know when this was shot or what this reference was for. I pulled this from a making of Godzilla video, but my favorite thing about this is the actor that plays Noda is in the background just kind of like watching.
Oh, can we talk about like kind of my favorite character in the entire movie?
I want to get back to the pseudomation eventually, but let's talk about the cast and crew, because they are amazing. Miles and Noda, I mean, without a doubt, I think is my favorite new character in any Godzilla movie.
He is low key. He's the smart friend, like in like the Gamera series and in Godzilla Singular Point. He is that anime smart friend. His hair is always moving in the wind. He's got this wonderful set of this graying hair that just seems to like have a life of its own. It's phenomenal.
It's played by Hidetake Yoshioka.
Yes.
I mean, looks a lot
has older. Worked with him several times.
Yeah. Yep. He was in the Always Sunset on Third Street.
First film. Yeah. Juvenile. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, has been in a lot of the director's films. I'm so glad he was cast in this role. He brings a lot of heart to the character that could have been just kind of, you know, like a soulless scientist type.
Yeah, they could have easily made him like just another Sarazawa type,
a brainiac, you know.
Yeah, but he's this sweet, kind of goofy, lovable character that I just did not expect from this movie, honestly. So
all the characters are
great. After the war, Koichi joins this tugboat, basically, of guys who go and kind of clear out the mines left over from the war. They have to sweep the ocean for these mines. And so there's a captain, there's a young kid, and then there's Noda, and then Koichi.
Cap, kid, and Doc.
Yeah, Cap, kid, and Doc. Koichi mans the guns to shoot down the mines, and they're on a wooden boat. And I don't know enough about the Pacific Theater, so I didn't realize that this was a thing, that they had magnetic mines. Mm-hmm. And so they had to make sure they didn't have any like metal comprising their boat. Otherwise, the mines would come after them.
It seems like a historical factoid that, you know, obviously it's got to be true in some form or fashion, but it's just like a perfect thing to kind of add in to this script to give it the verisimilitude that it needs. You know, they're working as minesweepers. They're literally cleaning up after, you know, the pains of World War II. They are still,
yeah,
and they're still doing something very dangerous. And I mean, for a lot of people, that first scene of them going up in this minesweeping boat against Godzilla is like one of the best. A lot of people hearkened it back to Jaws, you know, this small crew going out to fight this giant monster.
Well, yeah. And because they're waiting on this like giant cruiser that is based on a real life heavy cruiser. Like, yeah, the Takeo existed.
Yeah, and it's so funny. There's actually two minesweepers out there, and the other one's like, we're gonna get this monster first, and it's just immediately destroyed. And the captain character was ready to go. He's like, we gotta get out of here immediately after that.
And yeah, even the domestic stuff, like the relationship that Koichi has with Noriko, that develops.
They give it a lot of time to breathe. And
they do. And what's interesting is I love the way they do this. It's not your traditional kind of romance. You actually don't see them really being romantic, but there's a lot of unsaid things that hangs in the air. And I think this script and these actors do a beautiful job representing this domestic story between those three people. And all the relationships between Koichi and everyone else, even the woman who, Sumiko, who chastised him the first time he came back.
Yeah.
She becomes like a redemption, beloved like neighbor and auntie. Basically an auntie to Akiko.
Yeah. You know, she's one of those characters. It's like, oh, well, this is going to be like an antagonist kind of character in the movie. And then she turns into like one of the family units, like most important.
Yeah, but like, I think that's what I loved about this, because like, that's kind of how life can be. And this really did treat his characters like people and not just characters who were serving. Like, I don't feel like there was anyone that was actually serving a plot point, really.
Oh, no, I feel like every single character that we get introduced to, I mean, besides being, I think, extremely well acted. Some people kind of pointed out Koichi was a little, you know, ham-fisted in parts, but I believed like his kind of pathos of like not being able to let the war go. Yeah, and I think,
especially at the time, people were emoting a little bit differently. And that is something that, like, if you watch some old footage and stuff, like, that's how some people in that theater really were afterwards. So I buy all of that.
If he's, you know, early 20s, his entire life has been under like an imperial rule where he's been groomed to be a soldier for the empire, and towards the end of the war to give his life for basically nothing. At that point, the war was almost over and they could have had a million times the amount of kamikaze pilots, and it wouldn't have changed the outcome. So that's where we get introduced to him. And I mean, I immediately like him for, you know, having a conscience. We also meet an engineer that has a similar conscience, who I thought was just going to be like out of the movie, but comes back at the very end. Mr. Tachibana. Or no, Tachibana was a kid.
No, Tachibana was the guy.
Is he the older one? Right. Well, that, I mean, like I said, just every single character does feel like they're here for a purpose. Like when he's brought back, you know, as the pilot or the plane engineer, I was like, oh, this is tying so many things perfectly together in a bow at the end of this movie. But yeah, no one I really, nothing to complain about as far as the characters and story goes, which is so refreshing.
Yeah, like I have a minor quibble, but it does not affect my rating. It does not affect anything. It's just like, oh, I wish they had chose to do this instead.
Yeah, I have like one thing, but it's one of those things.
I wonder if we have the same thing.
Because we could talk about it. You know, what did worked, what didn't work. Well, it's a little bit early, but my thing is, I think I wrote it here in my notes. I wish they hadn't. I mean, this is a very perfect period piece, but I wish they hadn't telegraphed some things so much to the audience. The mm-hmm. ending of the film mm-hmm. with his use ejector. Of the ejector seat.
Yep.
I mean, not only do they show the seat in full frame in the film, and it has a German writing on it. So it's like, yeah. Okay, well, it's not a Japanese part. And, you know, they already said that the Japanese government didn't provide those to their pilots because they didn't really care about them. But like they end the scene with like Tachibana saying, well, there's one more thing I got to tell you. And then they cut. It's like, okay, we got it. He's going to.
That is exactly okay. We are on the same page because
it's so minor.
When he shows him the break, I was expecting, because I was expecting this. I was expecting that to actually be what he would have like rigged up an ejector seat.
Oh,
and right. I would have liked that to be a surprise that like he's prepared to die, and then poof, ejector seat.
So I think it is telegraphed so much to kind of distract you from. Almost the very next scene, the next day, when the auntie character gets an actual telegram, when Sumiko gets a telegram, and at the end of the movie, we find out that Noriko is actually alive. She was presumed dead in the Ginza attack.
Yeah, because she gets blown away by the shockwave and pushes Koichi into an alley so he doesn't get hit by the shockwave, and she goes flying in a way that I'm like, I didn't care that it was a nice and tidy ending, but I was like, I questioned that she lived.
Well, she might not have, and we'll talk about that. That's my favorite.
Yes.
That's my favorite scene of the movie. But yeah, let's. I'm glad that we're both on the same page. That is such a minor quibble, but I think it was an actual choice, you know. And I feel like audiences like to be in on things like that, like. They like to like nudge the person next to him and be like, oh, I like
a nice surprise.
Scene.
And like, if they had not telegraphed that scene and like, just give me like, oh yeah, pull this. And that had been the ejector. I'm like, oh, that'd been so nice. Like, I'm like, all right, awesome. Like, yeah. As opposed to seeing him, like, because I wanted to be able to come to the conclusion that like, of how Tachibana has kind of himself grown. And
so good.
Because it is so good.
I have goosebumps still, just thinking about that scene too, Miles.
It still works.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Is like, again, these are the most minor criticisms and quibbles that like do not affect my enjoyment of this movie whatsoever.
I've been thinking about the film nonstop for like a week, and I still haven't thought of anything like actually wrong with it.
I know. So this week, the new Miyazaki film comes out in theaters, The Boy and the Heron. And I am really... I believe
got my tickets already.
I do. So I believe that my wife is going to be off work this Sunday. And
is it a double header?
I really want to go see Godzilla Minus One again. She wants to see it because I was so enthusiastic about it. Everyone's talking about it. So she wants to, you know, but if I tell her there's a new Miyazaki movie, she's also like, oh, I think I might want to see that with Robert Pattinson.
I've been telling everyone that'll listen, see this in theaters. Cause it, like we said at the beginning of the episode, it got a kind of extended release of a few weeks. This is one I really hope they bring back, you know, for Godzilla Day in years to come, because it is so enjoyable with popcorn in hand in a big old reclining seat. I do want to go back and talk about Godzilla himself in this movie and the non-Suitamation, the CGI of the creature. You talked about the dorsal plates a little bit. It reminded me a little bit of like the for the atomic bombs testings and like mini bombs, there is like a firing pin that is like shot into the middle of the bomb. And that kind of feels like what's happening here when it charges up these back plates to energize the atomic blast. Oh, another small quibble I had is Noda seems to know that Godzilla can't use this atomic blast like immediately again. And I guess it's because he saw him destroy the warship and he wasn't destroyed by another blast immediately himself.
Right.
But that's the only indication.
Yeah, like, I mean, it is a correct assumption to make. Well,
but part of me is thinking Noda is just kind of lying to instill confidence in his peers, which I love.
He's making educated guesses and just like,
yeah,
committing to the bit.
he's doing the science on site that needs to be done. But yeah, my actual favorite part of this design, I kind of dislike the dorsal plates a little bit when they're extended. It just feels like it feels too big. I like them glowing. I don't need them to move.
I understand that. I think it looks so sick. It's so dope.
I mean, they needed to do something to make this, like I said, a very unique version of Godzilla. I think they achieved that. My favorite design element, though, is after his cheek gets blown up and regenerates, is it's slightly discolored the rest of the film.
Yeah.
It's like lighter. It's a little pink. That is awesome. I absolutely love that in the movie. I hope it comes back when he regenerates. But
well, I would also wonder if like it's that because it takes longer for it to like fully heal, and like, or if it does like heal a different color, it could also be like, oh, this is why, like, if they were to continue this, why Godzilla might have different forms and like look different each time he pops up.
I wish his atomic breath was more of a fire. This is, I mean, it feels very in line with the Shin Godzilla kind of laser beam blast. But
I love the laser. I'm a fan of the blue blast. I always have been. I've said that since the beginning of the show. Like, the blue blast is my thing. So like, I like that I get a blue blast and it sets off a freaking like
a
mushroom cloud explosion.
I mean, it's just cool. It is like finally a fully realization of monster equals a bomb, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, really the only negative is like he doesn't use it more in the movie, but the scenes of destruction we do get are just so great. The destruction of the first battleship, the fake battleship, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, what else we have to talk about in this movie? Do you have, besides what we've talked about so far, like a favorite scene or
is there
parts?
Anything left?
I mean, I was about to say every scene is so good. There's like nothing.
Yeah, I mean that
could be cut, you know, from this movie.
That's the thing, is like, and this is, I mean, this is a 2 hour and is it 19 minutes?
No,
it's 125 minutes. It's a lean short. 2 hour 5. So, well, in current times, yeah, like 2 hours being a short movie is insane to me. Like,
well, I mean, this is actually kind of long for a Godzilla movie, I guess, on average. But I feel like it speeds by.
Yeah, and I think since, I mean, because I know the MonsterVerse movies are longer. So I think the first 1998 one
is longer too.
Yeah, so I feel like in modern times we've certainly gotten longer. All the American ones are certainly 2 hours plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say this movie was 2 hours 5 minutes, and it felt lean. It paced itself beautifully. It's a movie.
You get Godzilla in like the first 5 minutes too. It's fast.
And Godzilla actually, well, he didn't eat people, but he certainly chomps people for the first time.
You know, like he does eat some of them. At the very least, he bites people.
He bites them. I just don't know if he, because and then I love the bit where he like, when he's in the city, he starts snapping at people. I just don't know if I see him eat them. I mean, he bites someone in half, so I assume like he swallowed the other half. But like,
yeah, it's scary. It's a scary introduction to a more Tyrannosaurus, you know, what they call digigrade feet, kind of like I said, like Gorosaurus maybe, or the Godzillasaurus from Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, you know, that version that we saw, and significantly shorter and maybe a little more kind of hunched over. I guess he kind of stands up when he gets bombed. But yeah, anything else you want to point out character wise or
I know that there's a bunch of humor stuff that I'm kind of missing, but like, again, I can't just like revisit and take notes because I just got to watch the movie in the theater. So we're really going more on just memory. So not off the top of my head.
I've got a couple things. I mean, besides the Jaws like boat scene,
just the way Genza, his face look as he's following the boat is just scary.
Yeah. The Genza district destruction sequence is just so good. I mean, I was a little bummed a lot of that was in the trailer, but I mean, the trailer got me very hyped for the movie, so I can't really complain about that.
There is a line in the trailer that I think it's in the first teaser that is not in the movie that I remember, where someone says that monster will never forgive us. And I kept waiting for that line to pop up. Like if they were going to talk about like how he got mutated or something, and like, that's what it was. But like, there seemed to be like something cut that like, oh, is there, I mean, it could have been just like someone localized something on a trailer incorrectly. I don't know. But like, but that line stuck with me.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like, you know, I mean, Japan is paying for ecological disaster that was put into effect by someone else, and they don't really have time to kind of mince words about that and how, you know, the A-bomb is wrong or whatever. They have to deal with like the reality of this creature attacking again. Like, they're pretty sure he's doing like a loop on his feeding cycle and he's going to be back to Tokyo sooner than later. So that, I mean, that's one of my favorite scenes, is when these combined non-government, ex-military forces put in this plan to tie up Godzilla and sink him to the bottom of the ocean. So cool. We talked about that, but it really hit home for me how dedicated they were when Godzilla destroys that decoy ship. When we see the ship with its wheel kind of lashed, and there's no one on board, I was like, okay, these guys, that's the difference between, like, if this was a military operation, every single one of those ships would be manned. They wouldn't be laying out like this giant ship just to be destroyed. But it goes back to Noda's speech the night before, or the week before, where he's, you know, talking about how the government wanted you to die for this country. We're asking you to do this so that we all can live. And then immediately after that planning session is when they tell the kid on the boat that he's not allowed to come with them. And it's like, oh boy, it's so good, because it's showing that it's like, while the plan is they all want to live, the captain and Noda both like fully understand that they're probably not coming back at the same time. And it's like, it's such a gut punch. But then that is turned around when he comes with all the tugboats at the end, and you're like, oh man, he wasn't about to let them, you know, risk their lives without him, you know, doing the same. It's just so good. That entire sequence from Noda's plan and his speech is amazing. But my actual favorite scene is really the emotional core of this movie, and that's the death and rebirth of Noriko in the film. It's just perfect filmmaking, Miles. Her death adds, like, you know, an amazing plot to the movie, like a revenge plot in a lot of ways.
Only that, but like it gives the movie such gravity, because you're like, oh wow, anyone can die.
It's right after Koichi goes and saves her from Godzilla too, so you're like, oh, you know, you're not worried about her, because she almost got killed by Godzilla like three times before she does,
and Yamazaki's like, gotcha.
But yeah, her death, it adds so much stakes. At that point, I was like deathly afraid for Noda and for the captain and for Koichi too. I thought they were showing the ejector seat like kind of to make you think he's going to survive, and then they're going to like pull the rug out from underneath you. But yeah, it added stakes in the movie. When she got, you know, blasted back by Godzilla's breath, you could hear a pin drop in my theater, and it just really started up that third act in such an intense moment. But her return at the end is such a triumphant, a joyful moment. People cheered in my theater. I mean, I was in a full theater on like the first opening night. So people there were Godzilla fans. But that emotional climax, you know, when the entire makeshift family, you know, he brings Akio with them when they're all reunited. It is, I mean, it's such a dual-edged reminder from the director, from Takashi Yamazaki. You know, this is a piece of fantasy and anything can happen and people can come back and we can have a happy ending. It's just pure movie magic. Like, I'm shoveling popcorn in my mouth and then it gets shattered again. Like, it turns it on its heels again when you see she has G cells like roiling underneath her skin. You're like, what? Just something completely out of left field. Mm-hmm. And then you hear Godzilla's music underneath the ocean below the depths as like his heart maybe is.
Yeah, it's his heart.
It itself. Like... Oh, boy. What an ending.
Yeah. And I loved what I was like said about that.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, I think it's more cinematic if it doesn't end neatly and properly. It's not just so a sequel can be made. It's so that the characters are kept alive in the hearts of the audience. And ended that with like, I wonder if you'll let me shoot one more picture. And so, I'm like, yes, please.
Yeah. I mean, that was not a you know, definite thing. I don't think the movie that they have planned next year is a sequel, but
I think the movie they have planned next year might get changed.
Oh, I hope. I swear if we get an immediate sequel, I'll be so excited. But yeah, even Minami Hamambe, who played Noriko, has come out and be like, I don't know what happened to my character at the end of this movie. Maybe I'm going to be the monster next time. I was like, no.
Well, no, I'm glad she said that because I was having a conversation about, you know, the potential shift into having this be a sequel and or having a sequel to this movie. And I would be super into it. Like, it's going to be tougher because, like, you got to have some monsters. Like, you can only have one Godzilla versus people movie, really.
I mean, I think you could bring Godzilla back in different ways, but
agreed. So
I want them to just remake the Showa era in this.
Well, there's a little bit of that. My pitch was you keep it focused on the issues,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't even have to have the same cast. It can take place, you know, decades later. Maybe some people come back, some people don't.
Oh yeah, you can easily skip ahead 10 years. And
I was going to skip maybe to the 70s and
have
Godzilla versus Hedorah.
Oh yeah,
that way you're like, oh, it's been like 25 years. The pollution, and you can have all this stuff. You can have a great conversation about corporations and climate change and all of that, and get a good gooey monster out of Hedorah.
Yeah, I mean, my pitch would be just to immediately make Godzilla raids again and get an Anguirus, who, like, at first you're like, okay, well, Anguirus is like the good guy going up against Godzilla, but then maybe there's a turn at some point, and for whatever reason, you know, you have to start rooting for Godzilla a little bit, this monster from the first film.
Here's the funny thing. It's maybe just me being a fan of Godzilla, but mm-hmm. even though, like, I'm in, I love all these characters. I want them to survive. I want them to take down the antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
When they meet Godzilla, I'm like, oh man.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised.
I'm always like, oh man,
they like so definitively kind of killed him. Like, his body like just broke apart from the inside. But
and I think obviously it's smart he's not to do that because you start off with a Godzilla who maybe isn't as invincible as other iterations of Godzilla tends to be.
Well, yeah, they talk very, you know, decidedly how he's completely armored from the outside. And if you can destroy his skin, it regenerates very fastly. But they're like, well, we blew a hole in his cheek. You know, why can't we just blow up his head? So that's plan C in this movie.
Also, if you want to just print money, and you've got this Godzilla who is an absolute antagonist, he's an anger Godzilla. People love it. And they're fine with him being the bad guy. Well, there's only one other big G that you can bring in.
And is that
you gotta bring in that turtle. You make something happen. You bring in that turtle. Gosh. And you finally make Gamera versus Godzilla. Now that's too much of a Showa thing because I think they want to keep this kind of serious and political and interesting. And I'm all for them doing that. That said, if they were to say, hey, we're gonna do Gamera versus Godzilla, you know, shut up and take my money.
Oh, man, I'll take
like, and I've been pretty vocal about how I don't need that movie. But at the same time, when they give me a good enough bad guy Godzilla, I'm you know what? I'd watch that.
I think if they do want to add some more monsters to minus one, the minus one averse, if you will, I think good guy monsters to go up against bad Godzilla is a great way. Like Mothra, introducing Mothra would be amazing. Or like I said, a kind of a good guy Anguirus at first.
Yeah, I could see that. I also don't mind Godzilla still being the force of nature like he was in the Heisei era. Mm-hmm. Where like Godzilla is clearly not on the side of anyone but Godzilla's
still kind of a bad guy. Well, yeah, that's funny. The other thing that the ending made me think of with Noriko's character, I was like, I'm wondering if she's going to have a connection to Godzilla, you know, like she can somewhat sense when he's there because of those irradiated cells.
And they can also talk to a certain turtle.
And then someone else has a connection. She has a magic necklace. Yeah.
No, I also seemed to be that she could be dying from radiation poisoning.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many ways you can go. It's just such a great both.
Yeah. Like it seems like a happy ending because, oh, she's not dead. And like the movie's like, no, she's not dead yet.
or like I said, she did die. And then maybe the G cells brought her back to life, you know?
Ooh.
We get
Godzilla versus Biollante.
This movie did amazingly in critics' minds and in the audience score. This recently overtook Oppenheimer as like the best reviewed film of the year, which is wild to me. This has a 97% when we're recording this score on Rotten Tomatoes, 98% audience score. I mean, when does that happen? That they're so high, so close together?
No, it's insane.
So there's been so many reviews. I think maybe like three not fresh reviews have come out, and I tried to read them. I didn't understand them. I'm so love blind.
I also think it's not that someone can't like the movie, but I also think when something, like especially after the fact, after something's been so beloved, there's always someone who has to come in with their arms.
But it's a thing. It's like, not only is this a great Godzilla movie, maybe one of the greatest Godzilla movies, this is just a great film by itself. You know, this is a great period piece. It's great war drama. Many things.
It shot up to the top of my Letterboxd rankings for this year. It's my number one movie of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, anyone who does choose to follow me on Letterboxd, I do have a ranked list of movies that I keep throughout the year. Just so I like kind of keeping track of what I've seen in a given year, so I can kind of go back and take a look at it. So it's all not ever definitive until after the year's over. But I always have this is my knee jerk reaction, and I like to visit at the end of the year. So I still feel the same way. So currently, my top five are number five, The Holdovers, which is phenomenal. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Barbie, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and Godzilla Minus One.
Great year for movies here.
It's been a fantastic. I mean, as it stands right now in 2023, I have seen 60 films released in 2023, and I don't go below 3 stars until about 49. So, like,
that's crazy.
That's a lot of solid movies.
Yeah. Like I said, the critics just absolutely love this. There's a lot of goodwill online. Collider just put out an article titled "Did Godzilla Minus One Just School Hollywood on Movie Making?" And yes, they did. Like, as far as like the budget to what this movie has made so far, it's outperformed, you know, it's made its budget back and then some. So it's outperformed Marvel, DC, like a bunch of these huge kind of tentpole superhero movies with, you know, an old school kind of awesome popcorn flick.
Yeah, I mean,
and the word of mouth, you know, has done very good for this film. You know, people telling each other, you got to see this in theaters, as opposed to just wait for it for streaming.
Yeah, this is certainly one of those things where if you have the option to see it in theaters, what am I doing? This is years later that this is being listened to. So you're not going to have the option to see this in theaters.
Like I said, I hope they bring it back.
This was a great theatrical experience. I am thrilled that I got to see another Japanese Godzilla in the theaters. I like what I'm seeing more and more is more foreign films. I mean, yes, a lot of stuff that I'm interested from Japan and Korea in terms of animation genre films, mm-hmm. and monster movies. But we're seeing that, hey, with more connections, there's a much more film literate audience that is showing up for these screenings. And the Shin movies and now this have certainly proven they show up for kaiju and tokusatsu films. Anime has showed up plenty of times. If it's put out by, oh gosh, I'm blanking now that I've Makoto Shinkai.
Yeah, one of the movies you saw this year.
Yes, Suzume, which, yeah, it's incredible. I love that we're getting more of these theatrical releases. It makes me so, so happy as a fan of film and as a fan of genre film. Patrick, I think we've gone on about this when we knew we were going to. I think it's time to settle into what our scores are.
I mean, it's full 10 out of 10, spoiler warning. Before I get into my personal enjoyment, if this never gets a sequel, I'll be fine. Yeah. I'll be perfectly fine with
100%.
It. 100%. This is a perfect standalone movie. Takashi Yamazaki did say in a Vulture article that once, quote, you have Godzilla fighting any kaiju, the human story kind of ends up taking a back seat. And, you know, maybe they can have both, you know, a sequel with some more monsters, but the human story needs to be there. And
absolutely,
I think if anyone is going to get like carte blanche from Toho to continue making movies, it's got to be this guy.
Oh, getting the international love this has gotten, like, yeah, that means a lot to Toho. So they're probably like, you know what? Here's a check.
I mean, Shin Godzilla had some great critical success as well. It just didn't, you know,
strike. It didn't catch on like, yeah, this one did,
because that movie, I think, was so specific to the Fukushima disaster, to the response to the Japanese government. This is a pure cinema joy that could be, I mean, like, the, I think the original Gojira enjoyed the world over.
And I will say, Shin Godzilla was a massive box office success. It made $78 million worldwide. It was a, yeah, huge hit. But I think the immediate reaction was a little mixed. I mean, Anno's always going to be divisive. And I think some people, the human story wasn't really there. It was very much an Anno story. And that's different than Godzilla Minus One, where it was very much a human story that also told a very scary monster movie. And, yeah, and so I think there's some core differences that as to why this has really hit the zeitgeist the way it has.
Worldwide, with only a week of kind of like world release when we're recording this, Minus One has already made $42 million. So it's on track, which is exciting.
Yeah, but it's on track, and it's also already quadrupled its budget, basically.
But yeah, I try not to spoil too much for you. After I got out of the early preview last Wednesday in IMAX, I just immediately typed, we got another Toho masterpiece on our hands. And I really do, I do think that. And I'm going to rewatch this movie when this episode comes out in 2026. But yeah, I walked out of that theater rejuvenated, exhilarated. And honestly, I've only had that kind of experience with a few films. And we're talking like the Jurassic Parks of this world. If this does get a series, and, you know, we get some more of these films in this genre kind of going forward, I'm going to be so excited for where kaiju movies are headed after this. And yeah, like I said, I've been thinking all week about if I would have changed anything about this movie, or if there's anything that bothered me about it. And I really can't think of one thing. It's a 10 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. What about you, Miles?
So yeah, this is a movie, like, I going in, I was having a conversation with somebody that, you know, for me, a solo Godzilla movie is a tough sell, because I've had the 54 film, which you can,
this
listen
is
to the episode.
Our
I love it.
Fourth?
It's our fourth
Godzilla movie.
We have The Return of Godzilla in 84, or Godzilla 1985. And I have mixed feelings about that one. I actually prefer the 85 version.
It's good.
It's fine. And then we have Shin Godzilla.
I guess five if you count.
I was only talking about the Japanese Godzilla movies. But yes, also, if you have the two American ones, you can count those as well. Well, no, because one of them has monsters in it. So I'm always like, do I need someone to reboot that story again?
How many times now, you got to see Batman's parents get killed in a in a back alley?
You know my personal opinion on that one. So I
yeah,
that's an inside joke, and that I can't stand the Batman origin being done over and over.
Pearls again. Dropping on the street.
Oh my gosh, our friend and my Moiner co-host, that's his catnip. If he doesn't see the pearls dropping, it's not a proper origin for Batman. So I went in with like high expectations because of the reactions, but I was still kind of like, okay, let's see how they do it. Because I am a little wary on the solo Godzilla movies outside of the 54 one, even though I have enjoyed all of them, including Shin. I like Shin a lot.
Yeah.
And this just blew every expectation away. I did not expect to get a phenomenal post-war treatise that just happened to have a monster movie in it. And the monster movie aspect was as socially or socio-politically relevant as 54's iteration. Mm-hmm. And as many times as there have been attempts to like add some commentary, nothing has been as succinct and as just impactful as what the crew did with Godzilla Minus One. So not only is it extremely emotional, is it very sweet in moments and funny and darkly funny in moments, it's got a great looking Godzilla that is terrifying for honestly the first time in 70 years. Like, mm-hmm. I love Godzilla, but he has not been scared. I mean, maybe as a kid, I thought it was a little scary in certain things, but like when I'm analyzing these movies, I think he's been scary twice. I think he's been scared in 54 and now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I agree.
I was trying to hold back because I know you used the M word, but I agree. This movie's a masterpiece. It's a 10 out of 10. I can't wait to watch it again.
It's so hard to, you know, say this, but I mean, I like this. I thought it was going to step on the toes of 1954's Gojira, being, you know, 7 years difference between when these movies take place. But this does go in so many different directions. I feel like kind of how I felt about the Blade Runner sequel. I was worried that movie was going to kind of go back and retroactively ruin. But I feel like this is a great companion piece to the original Gojira. This is a different telling. It's a different world. And it adds a whole bunch to the world. I mean, spoiler for my evocative rating for the movie as well. But what about your technical aspects of the movie? You know,
I mean, like I said, I have minor quibbles that mean nothing. I think the acting is astounding. I think Godzilla looks fantastic, and they are able to really manipulate their budget perfectly. I think you have a phenomenal director who had a very specific vision and realized it with a number of cast and crew who shared this idea and mm-hmm. executed it to perfection. I think you have a fantastic score that when you have the needle drop of the classic Ikifubi tune, you're like, oh, like someone in my theater clapped when that happened. Oh, it was
some of the best usage of those original scores.
Yes, I think,
of any Godzilla movie.
I mean, from top to bottom, this movie doesn't really have a flaw in its script or its acting or its technical stuff. Some of the special effects might not be up to snuff for some folks who are a little too snooty, but 10 out of 10, this movie is a masterpiece.
Yeah. That's the thing. So many critics did have, you know, issues here and there with the CGI, issues here and there with some of the acting.
You know who's never going to plan out CGI? You know this.
Yeah.
This
well,
guy.
I mean,
you heard me talking about Deep Rising.
I just didn't see it. I mean, I thought everything looked.
I thought
absolutely
fantastic.
And yeah, loved all the characters, loved the script. And like I said, this is like the first Godzilla movie that I was fine with the amount of screen time Godzilla got. I, you know, was stuck to my seat, edge of my seat, because of the human drama of this ensemble cast that just kind of grows and grows as the movie goes on. Yeah, I think this Godzilla looks great. It's kind of one of the most animalistic versions of the monster we felt in a long time. And I think part of that is because there is not a person in a suit or a human person kind of giving it its movements. And yeah, I don't know. There's something about Godzilla's eyes in this movie that really is off-putting to an extreme degree. The director said he used his cat, I think, for some reference photos. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the stare of death you get from a cat, like when he's following the Minesweeper sequence, just cat playing with some toys out in the ocean. But yeah, the period piece setting of this I was very unsure of when this movie was announced, but looking back on it, I'm just, they did it so much justice. They utilized it so well. So I'm also a 10 out of 10. And guess what? Like I said, for the evocative nature, I'm a 10 out of 10 as well. I think this is going to go down. And, you know, when this episode comes out, we'll hopefully know a little bit more as, you know, one of the most important pieces of art in the kaiju canon. Mm-hmm. Besides being a beautiful film, it is, I feel like, what these movies need to be. They need to be these popcorn films with an emotional core, with a great monster, with all the pistons firing on all cylinders. And we've talked about that with some of other kind of 10 out of 10 movies that that have come along that have influenced so many other directors down the line. But yeah, honestly, if I took a hard look at it, like, I mean, this is definitely easily top five favorite Godzilla movies of all time. I think it's definitely in the top five kaiju movies of all time for me. But I think this is going to stick out as one of, if not the top Godzilla 3 film of all time, because I've already given some 10 out of 10s, including Versus Biollante, but I love Godzilla King of the Monsters as well. And it has brought fresh ideas to a now over 70 year old property in a way that I just didn't expect was going to happen with this movie. Yeah, so 10 out of 10 for me as well, Miles. It is a more respectful reboot than I really thought we were ever going to get. So I was pleasantly surprised. What about you?
I mean, yeah.
Spoiler warnings.
Spoiler warning. Yeah, it's a 10 out of 10. I think this hits every note. I think it starts some new ones in what I hope is by doing something that I kind of hate when everyone's, oh, Godzilla's going back to its roots. Look, I mean, a lot of times you give us a good monster mash and we're going to be stoked. But it is nice to know that someone can take a 70-year-old property, make something that feels as fresh as it ever has. Mm-hmm. And yes, that you can continue to tell sociopolitical stories with kaiju and it can still be relevant because these themes are still relevant. Even using the World War setting, it's telling an innately human story that anyone can relate to. Like, it is a very human tale. And at its core, some of the best kaiju films are that. Not only that, but yes, you have an awesome Godzilla film. This movie has made an international impact in a way that, frankly, no Godzilla film has in a very long time. And that's no, well, not to the back. Godzilla vs. Kong brought movies back, so there's that. But this one has certainly had an immediate impact in a way that few kaiju films have. I am looking forward to seeing what happens 20 years from now and seeing what young filmmakers might have been influenced by this movie. Because I think this movie is going to have a long-standing impact on the subgenre, on genre films in general, on Japanese films in general, on monster movies in general. I think this is an extremely, at least right now, important movie and, frankly, one of the best Godzilla films ever made.
Oh, what a time to be alive. We're so lucky. As soon as some of the superhero movies start getting bad, we got great Godzilla movies to take their
place. So Patrick, what's that tally up for?
The easiest math for any Godzilla movie we've had to do in a while. We're both a perfect 10 out of 10, which, yeah, you know, I kind of am surprised about. Like I said, I just maybe didn't until those early reviews started coming out expect this movie to be as great as it is, as it decidedly has become. I mean, we've given out 10 out of 10s to a couple of Godzilla movies before, but I feel like this one is even above those. I personally have so much to say about Versus Biollante as an important film in the series, but I feel like we're kind of like above and beyond even the Godzilla community when it comes to enjoying that film. But I feel like we're right on the money for both G fans and just regular moviegoers for this film. Podcast Final is a 10 out of 10. Like I said, we'll revisit this in a few years, talk about it in its place of some other movies that have come out maybe since then, but I don't see that score changing, honestly. I don't know about you.
I would be surprised if it changes.
Right. So that's going to do it. This, like I said, recorded, gosh, December 7th, 2023. We'll put this in the time capsule for over 2 years. That's going to do it for us. Hopefully you can still find us on your social medias at the Kaiju versus History. If the world hasn't blown up, email us at KaijuVersusHistory@gmail.com and take a look at our website, KaijuVersusHistory.com. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate and review and let us know what you think. And you can find all of our reviews at this point when this episode comes out. Over 200 episodes of reviews of Kaiju films on our Letterboxd account, where you can see our 10-star reviews in 5-star format. All right, so what comes after this? What is topping this? Shouldn't we just end the podcast now?
Well, believe it or not, we have more Godzilla in 2023 to talk about. This time, a continuation of the legendary MonsterVerse of movies that sold the idea to Apple TV to do a series set immediately after Godzilla's first attack in 2015. So tune in next week for History versus Monarch, Legacy of Monsters.